Hey there, I'm Ashwin, and the human body, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Well, this is that part of the night where you get to understand the madness that goes on within you. We unlock the mysteries of the body so you can use it a little bit better. I'm joined now by Dr. Michael Todorovic, is it? Sorry?
That's all good.
Should've checked. Is it Vic or...
Todorovic.
Todorovic, yeah.
Yep.
So you're a neurologist and...
Neuroscientist.
Neuroscientist, yep. Okay. All right, and so you specialise in spinal injury and rehab, it says.
Yeah, we're doing some spinal cord injury research at the moment, but I did my PhD in clinical neuroscience.
So you know a lot about the body.
I hope so.
It's a useful skill. And Dr. Matt Barton, a senior lecturer in biosciences at the School of Nursing and Midwifery in Griffith.
I am, yes.
Excellent.
How are you, Ash?
Well, I loved our chat. It was a few weeks ago where we were talking about the stomach and all the madness that goes on there.
Mm.
What are we talking about tonight?
Kidneys.
We haven't moved far. We're just kind of behind it.
Yeah.
Before you go on, if you have any questions about the kidneys, what they are, how to not mess them up, give me a call, 1300-222-612, or you can send a text message to 0467-922-612 or tweet ABC Brisbane. So let's just start off from the beginning. What are the kidneys?
You want to go, Mike?
Yeah, so the kidneys are two organs. They're part of the urinary system, and their primary function is to filter our blood and turn that blood filtrate into urine for us to pee out. They perform a number of other different roles in regards to metabolism and so forth, but yeah, the primary role is that of filtering the blood and creating urine.
And why do we have two of them?
Well, I mean, essentially we could survive with just one or a part of one. So probably 2/3 of one you could technically survive off, but two, why do we have two? Well, I guess, two is better than one.
Yeah.
But two hearts would be better. Two brains would be better. Why has nature given us two kidneys, but not two of anything else?
They're all very good questions. The human body is an enigma sometimes. Yeah. I'm not sure why we necessarily have two. For redundancy's sake, I suppose, it plays a very important role in taking that blood and measuring exactly what's in it and deciding what we keep and what we pee out.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was just going to say, each of those kidneys are attached to two ureters, which are two muscular tubes that travel to a bladder, which is a storage unit for our urine.
Yeah.
And then that bladder is attached to one urethra, which then allows us to expel that urine out to the external environment.
Okay. So, and talking about location, that's boarding school. Everyone used to talk about the kidney punch, which was very painful. So is that a phenomenon in medical science, the kidney punch?
Well, you can have a kidney biopsy punch, but that's probably a different thing.
Okay.
So if you're going to punch me
sometimes in the... I feel like giving Matt a kidney punch.
All right, Ash, so if you're going to punch me in the kidney, where would you be striking me?
Well, I did a bit of research, so I know now it's in the, like, under your rib cage, behind you, under your rib cage, to either side of your spine. Is that where the kidneys
are? Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. And which, since you said there's two of them, which you're correct, which one's lower? There's one's lower than the other.
I'm going to say, just as a guess,
50-50.
Right feels like it would be lower.
Yeah. And that's predominantly because you have the big organ that we did last week, which is the liver. And the liver pushes it down slightly.
Okay. All right.
So probably half of them are protected by your ribs. So ribs 11 and 12.
Yes.
Or at least on the left side, 11 and 12. On the right, just 12. But you have a kind of a bed of muscle around it.
Mm. The 12th rib is the last rib.
Yes.
The floating
rib.
Last floating ribs, yeah.
And you've got a bit of fat on top of the kidneys as well. It's not that punchable.
Yeah, you'd be doing well if you striked it flush.
Okay.
But it would have to kind of go through quite a lot of tissue to get to that directed.
It's turned into a bit of an MMA segment.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And how to best punch the kidney.
Yes.
Nobody punch anyone's kidney, please.
No, don't do that.
But that fat is really important. That fat is called a structural fat. And we've got functional fat, and that's the fat that we sort of put around our tummy and our waist and our bum. Mm. And that fat's used for energy. But there's also fat that sits around organs called structural fat, and it's there for protection, and it's also there for anchorage. So there was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine about a marathon runner who came in to see his GP, and he was presenting with these sort of lumps at the front of his abdomen, and these lumps would disappear, and they didn't know what it was, so they went and did a couple of scans, and they found out that this was actually his kidneys floating from the back to the front and then back again, and they didn't know why, and they realized that this fat that's surrounding the kidneys, this structural fat, had started to be worked away because this individual was running so much. Yes. They'd used through that functional fat and started to work through this structural fat. And so the anchorage and protection that this fat provided disappeared, and these kidneys just started to float around.
That's amazing, because everyone's into, you know, cardio. It's all about cardio and gains now. So your body will burn the organ protecting fat if it needs to.
You need to be pretty extreme in your exercise and pretty lax in your nutritional intake. So this was extreme.
Yeah.
Very extreme. Yeah. I mean, you'd see this in malnourished cases.
Yeah. Okay. And just, we were talking about redundant organs before. While I've got you here, does anyone know what the appendix does?
Yeah.
Right, so that takes us back a few weeks. But,
okay, just a quick summary then.
Yeah.
It was thought to be redundant, but actually it's evolved about 30 times in multiple species. And it's shown that once it's there, we don't get rid of it. And okay. So the thought is it's there for a bacteria reservoir. And when you have bouts of diarrhea and infection, it kind of repopulates your gut with new bacteria.
Right. Which is essential for health. We're talking about gut bacteria at the time.
Yeah.
And that's
the
reason why, because there's so much bacteria sitting within it, and it's sort of like this out-pocketing of the bowel, that if anything sort of gets caught in there and gets trapped, it's very likely that the bacteria will start to feed on it and propagate and then irritate the tissue, and that's appendicitis.
Right.
And so that can start to get bigger and bigger and more inflamed and more inflamed. And if it bursts, into a very clean and sterile environment called the peritoneum, and that can be very dangerous. That's why if you have appendicitis, they just go in, take it out.
Get it out. You're listening to ABC Radio. I'm talking with Dr. Michael Todorovic and Dr. Matt Barton about the kidneys. If you've got any questions about kidneys, give me a call, 1300 222 612, or send a text message, 0467 922 612. Jamie has texted in, I have three kidneys, or more accurately, one of my kidneys is a duplex. Does this make being a live donor less risky?
What do you reckon?
Good question. Well, with the kidneys formation, so in the embryology, they actually start at the base. And so there's this big line of tissue that forms both kind of your kidneys and your genitals. And so one goes down, one goes up. And so the kidneys go up and the genitals go down. And so when they kind of are forming, sometimes the kidneys hopefully will form on two separate sides, but sometimes they can form multiple sections, and sometimes they can join down the bottom and they cause or form something we call a horseshoe kidney. And that's kind of this big continuous band that looks like a big U shape, and that can kind of get stuck on the way up. Now, in terms of multiple, it's probably a subsection of one, I would imagine. So sometimes when the kidneys are forming, they're kind of lobulated, so kind of globular, and then once they get to their resting point, they kind of merge into one.
Okay.
So I would imagine, just guessing without being a nephrologist or a renal specialist, that they've probably formed separate and haven't come together. And so it's kind of like two sections of one. How that would go with transplants, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
How well do we understand the kidney compared to other organs?
Well, I think we understand it quite well. I mean, we understand how important it actually is, and in certain diseases where the kidneys don't work, we try and do its job with a machine, so dialysis, for example. And so every single minute, your heart will pump out 5 liters of blood. Of that 5 liters, 1 liter goes to the kidneys, and of that 1 liter, 120 milliliters get turned into this pre-urine. Right? And that's every minute. So we make 120 milliliters of this pre-urine. But if you were to sort of scale that up to how much of this pre-urine would make over a day, that ends up being about 180 liters of pre-urine. So how much, Ash, without getting too personal, do you think you urinate in a single day?
If I've got a gig, maybe 35 times. Otherwise, I'd say three.
Okay.
Three liters? Maybe, liters, are you talking
about? Yeah, but what about liters? Yeah.
Liters, I would say maybe 750 mils.
Okay, 750 mils. So
for the whole day?
I'm terrible at maths, but that feels right. Is that right?
So you'd probably do about double that.
Okay.
I would say about 1.5 to 1.8 litres or 1.5 to 2 litres in a day, which means that if we make 180 litres of pee, but we only pee out 1.8 litres of pee, we're only peeing out 1% of the pee that we make.
What's going on there?
Exactly. So what happens is the kidneys, the way they do this is they take the blood, they filter it through like a sieve, and they pretty much filter everything that's small enough in the blood. They filter all of it, as though if you were going to clean your garage, for example, the best way to do it is take everything out of the garage, then choose what you want to keep and put it back in. That's what the kidneys do. It takes everything out and then puts in the select things that it wants, which is 99% of what it's filtered, and just pees out that 1%.
Yeah, so that's constant filtration. I'm going to come back to this in a minute, because Craig from Mount Isa just called in before, spoke to Tom, our producer here, and he said he was refused army service because he was told albumin was leaking from his kidneys. And he asks, what does that mean?
Okay.
Okay, so albumin is the most common protein in your plasma. Plasma is the watery part of your blood. Now, that's made by your liver, and it's an important protein because it helps carry things that can't dissolve in the plasma. But it's also very important for sucking fluid back into your blood. And so, some people who have low albumin levels, what they can get edema in their body. So, they sometimes get it in their legs, sometimes in their even in their lungs.
Is that a clot?
No, it's just fluid that's gone out into your tissue but can't come back. And so, sometimes you'll see people with swollen ankles and so forth.
Yeah.
Now, in this listener's case, his question was... he has a leaking. And so, like Mike said, in your kidney, it's like a colander, which is a strainer. It should only let through small things. And albumin's a big thing. It shouldn't let it through. And so, in some cases, for some people, that the strainer is kind of letting bigger things through. In some cases, it can be proteins or sometimes blood cells. And so, in this case, it's the albumin, and it's coming through the kidney into the urine. And so, I can't really tell you how severe or not it is, but if it is severe, so in some cases you can get conditions like glomerulonephritis, which is inflammation of that strainer, and it lets through a lot of stuff. And if that's severe enough, it can cause a whole lot of downstream effects.
Yeah, so if you look at this sieve, there's actually around about three sieves on top of each other, and each one have different sized holes, and some actually only let certain things through because of their characteristics. So, for example, cells, like red blood cells and white blood cells, so the red blood cells carry oxygen, white blood cells are our immune cells, they're far too big to normally get through those three layers of the sieve. Proteins, they can sometimes get through, but proteins have a negative charge to them, and one of these layers also has a negative charge. And so, just like you've got two magnets of the same pole, they push each other apart, that's what this membrane does. And like Matt said with glomerulonephritis, you can have your own body start to attack this one single layer that's negatively charged, and that only allows for proteins through. And so, because only that one layer is damaged. But like Matt said, with this particular caller,
we're not sure the cause.
Sometimes it goes
with the autoimmune conditions.
Yeah.
And the way it was always explained to me is, it's kind of like you have this immune response, kind of like two elephants having a fight. And it's traveling, these elephants are traveling through your blood, which is not really a problem. But because it comes now to your kidneys, it's now like having two elephants having a fight in a shop. It's just going to destroy everything. And so for some of these conditions, it can cause the kidney injury that way.
It's interesting because I've got asthma, which is a lung autoimmune condition. Diabetics have got insulin problems. Even the kidney is subject to the body turning on itself as well.
With all these autoimmune disorders, it's basically your immune system is your watchdog, and it's supposed to see things that it recognizes as non-self. But sometimes it sees self as non-self and just attacks you as though it's attacking something foreign. Yeah. And it can be pretty much any part of your body that can do this too. And like you said, if it's doing it at the pancreas, it can be type 1 diabetes. If it's doing it at the bronchioles, it's going to be asthma. Yes. So, yeah.
Everything's vulnerable. I've just had another SMS come in. No name on this one, but can kidneys measure blood sugar and expel the excess?
So, what happens with... Okay, so for anyone who's not a diabetic, will ingest certain amounts of sugar, and this sugar is going to go to the liver, and if it's too much, liver stores it. If it's not enough, the liver will release it. Insulin gets released depending on the level of blood sugar, and insulin's released from the pancreas. If blood sugar's too high, insulin's released, and this is a key that opens the doors to our cells that can suck the glucose in, and the cells can use it for energy. Now, because glucose is going to be in your blood at some point, it's going to get filtered through the kidneys. Because like I said, 120 milliliters a minute, or about a liter of blood every minute, goes to the kidneys to be filtered. Glucose will inevitably be filtered. But for all of us who do not have diabetes, the amount of glucose that gets filtered, 100% of it gets thrown back into the body, and none of it gets weed out. So this is because the body knows how much glucose should be filtered and how much needs to be thrown back.
Yeah.
Okay. But for diabetics, when they eat sugar, the insulin's not being released. So the doors aren't opening of the cells, and the sugar isn't jumping into the cells. It remains in the blood. Mm. And this continues to increase and rise and increase and rise, and the blood sugar levels go really high.
Yeah.
And so that means the kidneys have to filter a lot of glucose. And that means that all this glucose that's coming in, the kidneys only think X amounts coming through and throws only a certain amount back into the body, but can't handle throwing all of it back.
Mm.
So this glucose or sugar stays in the urine and gets peed out. And this is where the term diabetes mellitus, which means sweet like honey, comes from, because they used to find out whether somebody's diabetic or not by tasting their urine. And if it was sweet, yeah, it indicated diabetes.
Medicine was a tough job back in the day, wasn't it?
I know. I'm glad that we don't have to taste urine anymore.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about fecal transplants, which you told me about last time as well. But,
they're amazing. They're saving people's lives, fecal transplants.
You're listening to ABC Radio. I'm here with Dr. Michael Todorovic and Dr. Matt Barton talking about kidneys. Back to basics. What can we do to look after our kidneys?
Drink a lot of water.
Yes. There you go.
It's always the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Drink a lot of water.
Eat well. Always eat well.
Exercise.
What's a good kidney diet? What is it? Anything's good.
I think
not too much proteins. Like sometimes excessive proteins. So some people who are on a lot of supplements with lots of protein in it, this can actually put a lot of strain on your kidneys.
So do bodybuilders have kidney issues?
A lot of them can. Yeah. And because there's a lot of the ingredients within these powders that we're not really sure what's in it.
Well, that's interesting, because when you think protein, you think it's essentially a good product because it's going to build up muscle. People don't think about these side effects like kidney damage.
Mm. Well, people also don't realize that you probably don't need to ingest the amount of protein that is being ingested in order to build muscle as well.
Yeah.
But you need to think about, because your kidney is a filter, would you put things in your swimming pool that the swimming pool filter needs to deal with? No, because, horrible things that they can't filter properly.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to change that filter. We can't change our filter.
So what are you talking about avoiding, like alcohol, or is there anything else that's going to strain the kidney?
Well, it's difficult because the kidneys are really great at what they do. And there's not necessarily, from what I can think of, any foods I would not ingest, apart from the fact that, like Matt said, generally speaking, have a balanced diet, not too many of one thing.
There are some medications that can knock the kidney off in one go. So yeah. Some, like Nurofen, over time can be quite bad. So some of the anti-inflammatories. I was going to say something else. I've got a mind blank.
Yeah, so there's a couple of drugs out there that actually...
Antibiotics.
So the kidneys, in addition to filtering, is one of the major control mechanisms for blood pressure, which is strange to think, because you'd think blood pressure would be controlled by the heart.
Yeah.
And the reason why the kidneys control blood pressure is because they need to continually filter that 120 milliliters every minute. Mm. If it goes too low, you can get very sick and die. If it goes too high, it can cause damage and you can get very sick and die. So the kidneys need to maintain this blood pressure. So if somebody, for example, they bleed out, or they have some sort of anaphylactic shock, and the blood pressure or blood volume drops too low, the kidneys go, wait a minute, I'm not filtering this 120 mils a minute. I need to do something. So what the kidney does is it releases a couple of enzymes and hormones that boost the blood pressure back up. And this is one of the reasons why some people can have chronic hypertension, chronically high blood pressure, and they give medications that can block these pathways that the kidney plays around with. But again, like Matt said, there's certain drugs that you can take which change the way that the kidneys filter. It's not at the filter itself, yeah. but changes the speed in which it filters. And if it doesn't filter it properly, that itself can damage kidneys.
And as well as filtering and maintaining blood pressure, one thing I was reading is that it's also associated with your body's vitamin D levels, which you need for healthy bones. Is that right?
Yeah, so you have this fat in your body called cholesterol, and cholesterol kind of encounters UV light and your skin, and that kind of gets the process started. And so that vitamin D precursor then goes to your kidney, which the kidney then manipulates and kind of activates the vitamin D, and the vitamin D then can help you store or maintain levels of calcium for both bone storage, but also to maintain calcium levels in your blood at a certain level, which is important.
Right. So if you don't look after your kidney, you can also get broken bones in older age.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. There's many things that can go wrong once the kidney starts failing, and that's one of them. Another one is anemias, because it helps to regulate the production of blood cells as well.
Yeah. Okay. Does genetics have an impact? Do some people have naturally more productive kidneys than others?
Maybe not more productive kidneys, but there are genetic aberrations, I mean, globally, that can affect functions of any tissue, really, of the body, and kidneys would be included in that. So, for just as one example, there is a autosomal recessive genetic disease in which people can't absorb an amino acid called tryptophan. And tryptophan is one of the precursors to make serotonin, the neurotransmitter, you know, help us with sleep-wake cycles, for example. Now, when we ingest tryptophan from our diet, that's the only way we can get it, by the way, we have to get it from our diet, usually we absorb it into our bloodstream and then we take it and make serotonin or melatonin. But some people have this mutation, genetic aberration, which doesn't allow them to absorb tryptophan, and the bacteria in the gut is forced to metabolize it. And what it does is it metabolizes it into a chemical structure that when it becomes subject to oxygen, it turns blue, and then your pee can come out blue.
Right.
So there's some individual, you'll find it early on. Yes. What's it called? Blue diaper syndrome?
Yeah.
Blue nappy syndrome.
Yeah. It sounds harmless, but fun. Is there
a... Well, you could take food dyes if you want to have blue
same
urine.
Effect. Mm. Yeah.
And that's actually, it was through the urine, or trying to make urine into gold, that actually the first person discovered the first chemical element. And so this was back in the 1600s, where a German thought he could make urine into gold. And so what he did was he stored thousands and gallons of urine in his basement until it becomes smelly, as you'd imagine. And then he started boiling it. And what he noticed was this white substance started to come to the top.
Yeah.
And then he distilled it, and that white substance started to glow in the dark. And so he named this the light bearer, which means phosphorus. And so this was the first case that phosphorus was created. And so that white would spontaneously kind of combust in exposure to oxygen.
Yeah.
But they manipulated it slightly different, and they got this from bones, because bones has phosphorus in it as well.
Yes.
And this gives us like the ends of matches. And so the red phosphorus is much more stable. It only ignites once it's under friction.
Yeah.
And that's when you can see a match. So this guy was trying to make gold, but he got phosphorus out of it.
Yeah. What a great contribution to science, though.
No. Imagine storing gallons of pee under your house.
Clearly not renting. That's
that's right. Yeah. Clearly not having too many friends either.
No.
Or a lot of friends if he's gathering that much urine.
But is that the key to good science? As you guys know, I mean, do you have to
don't
be
have any
recluse?
Friends.
Yeah.
It's the price we pay.
Yeah.
That's the excuse I have, at least, for not having any friends.
Yeah. You listen to ABC Radio. We have to wrap this up soon, but just give me some kidney advice out there. You said drink lots of water. Anything else, any tips that you want to give people to just look after themselves?
I think, again, generally speaking, probably the best health, without knowing an individual, the best health advice you could probably offer is drink a lot of water, eat a balanced diet, and do some exercise.
Yes.
You know, it sounds cliche, and it sounds like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's probably the best general advice that can be given.
Simple.
Avoid diabetes, high blood pressure,
yes,
and too much Nurofen. Yeah. They're the big things that really knock the kidneys off.
Can we have a decent aging process if we look after ourselves internally, or does the body just start to shut down a little bit once you get after 75?
There is a thing called apoptosis, and I think that's Greek for the leaves falling off the tree in autumn. And it basically is a programmed cell death. So pretty much all the cells in our body have a programmed time to die. And we don't necessarily know why we age, but we do, because our cells over time, as they make new copies of themselves, slowly start to die. And it's inevitable and it's programmed. And maybe at some point in the future, we'll be able to get over it. But every organ system's going to do it.
As people working in the medical profession, I mean, you have to deal with these harsh realities of the body getting older and dying. Do you focus on the psychological side of your craft as well, getting people to be more comfortable with disease and breaking down and getting older?
Well, our focus when it comes to lecturing, for example, is simply on the disease states and on the basic anatomy and physiology. There are other courses, I know it's a bit of a cop-out, but there are other courses that talk about the psychosocial aspect of this. And it's probably, it is a huge topic, and it is a huge thing to focus on. It should be focused on, because especially when it comes to age-related diseases and aged care health, I mean, these things are important and growing. They're huge. So, but it's beyond what we could actually teach within our course if we wanted to get through all the anatomy and all the physiology. Don't you reckon, Matt?
You've been hearing from Dr. Michael Todorovic, a neuroscientist, and Dr. Matt Barton, senior lecturer in biosciences at Griffith University. You guys are going to be back next week. What are you going to be talking about?
What happens when you don't look after the kidneys and you don't do what we tell you to do? No, it's basically kidney stones. What happens when the kidneys actually start to shut down themselves and go through dialysis, and a whole bunch of other different kidney diseases and disorders?
You're listening to ABC Radio. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks, mate.